Hello everyone, welcome back to True Crime Prime. My name is Maria, and on this episode, we will be going back to the Roaring Twenties in the city of Chicago, and we will be discussing the murderess who inspired the character Roxy Hart in the Broadway hit smash and Oscar-winning movie, Chicago. Beulah May Sheriff was born on November 18th in 1899. She was born in Owensboro, Kentucky, to Mary and John R. Sheriff. Beulah was described as being more than the typical rebellious teenager, and feeling she had outgrown her small town, she elopes with a linotype operator by the name of Perry Stevens, and together they have a son. But Beulah didn't really take to being a housewife and a mom, and she was constantly leaving the baby with the father to go out drinking and dancing. Finally, Perry had had enough and puts Beulah out of their home and divorces her. This is when she then meets and ultimately marries Albert Annan, who goes by Al. They move to Chicago, and the lights and the party nightlife music really suited Beulah so much more. Again, Beulah wasn't satisfied with just being a housewife. Al was a mechanic who earned about $60 a week. Very hardworking from dusk till dawn to provide for the family. But Beulah wasn't interested. She wanted to go out partying and dancing, and she gets restless and bored. Soon, she starts having an affair with Harry Kalstack, a laundromat manager where Beulah worked as a bookkeeper. The affair started off with the two of them talking long hours and going on walks together, and him taking her to lunch. Soon, he would start hanging around their apartment, Beulah and Al's apartment, that is, while Al was out at work. And they would be drinking, listening to jazz records, and having sex. After a few weeks of this affair, Beulah started becoming very irritated with Harry because she felt all he wanted to do was hang around her apartment, drink, and have sex, and not spend any money on her. As a matter of fact, she was paying for all of the drinks. Or should I say, Al was paying for the drinks. On one afternoon, when Harry came to get some money from Beulah to get their drinks for that day, after he got back and they had drank everything and he wanted to go get more liquor, they began to get into an argument, and Beulah starts antagonizing him and picking an argument, telling him that she had taken another lover and saying that he was nothing to her but a jailbird. Harry was an ex-convict who had once been in prison for a statutory crime, aka what we would call rape. At this point, Harry had had enough, and he tells her it's over, and he breaks up with her. She then begins begging him not to break up with her and not to leave her. And as he was walking towards the door and she realized that he really was going to leave, she picks up a gun and shoots him as he was leaving. But this shot doesn't kill him immediately. As he lay slumped over on the floor dying, Beulah begins to play a jazz record, Hula Loop, and drinking while he slowly bleeds to death on the floor. After he dies, then and only then does she place a call, but not to the police, but to her husband Albert. She called him at the garage where he was working as a mechanic and sounded frantic. "I just shot a man, Albert," she told him. "Hurry home." When he arrived, he found Harry in their apartment, slumped up against the wall with a bullet wound to his back, and by this time he was dead. Al began looking around the apartment, and he noticed Harry's clothes laid off to the side. There was two drinking glasses, and the jazz record was still playing. Beulah told him that Harry, a man she had met at the laundry where she worked, that he had shown up at their apartment and tried to come in very aggressively, and he had brought wine with him. She decided at this time it would be best to have a drink with him, just to humor him before asking him to leave. But when they were finished and she asked him to leave, she said that Harry tried to assault her. She said she grabbed the .38 caliber revolver that they kept in their apartment. She told him she would shoot, but he continually kept coming towards her. And she said she fired the gun and he fell to the ground. Albert was the one who finally called the police to report the assault on his wife. When the officers arrived, Al had told them the story that had been told to him by Beulah. But this is not the story that Beulah would ultimately stick to. She would actually change her story three times. Finally, the next day, after she had been taken in, she had finally confessed that she had been having an affair with Harry. And she said that the afternoon when she shot him, she had told him that they were breaking up. And when she asked him not to leave, he ignored her and continued to head for the door. Angry that he would dare break up with her and leave, in a rage, she grabbed a gun and shot him. Afterwards, she began in a panic, thinking that the neighbors had heard the commotion. She then turned the record player up louder and continued to play the record while she was trying to figure out what to do next. She said she called her husband immediately, but the coroner's inquiry would provide evidence that Harry had not died instantly, but had been lying on the floor dying and bleeding out for almost 2 to 3 hours before finally dying from his wound. The coroner reported that he had been shot at some time around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but Beulah hadn't called Albert until almost 5. The police didn't buy her story, and she was arrested and taken to the jail at Cooks County Jailhouse. While in jail, Beulah then begins giving interviews from her cell, and she actually complained about not being able to have cold cream or powder for her face, and that the only music that was ever played was gospel music. But she continued to give interviews from her jail cell and having her picture taken and crying oh so lovely about how sorry she was and that she actually missed her 7-year-old son that she had abandoned when she moved to Chicago with Al. She also stated that she was concerned that her father would not give her any money to pay for her lawyer. And her cause for concern was correct. Beulah's father would not give her any money for her defense, stating she wanted a gay life and she's had it, and that he didn't feel that him and his wife should die in the poorhouse due to her foolishness. Thousands of people in several cities all over the world knew of her story and saw her pictures in the paper, and she instantly became an overnight celebrity. Newspapers were quoted saying that she was the prettiest woman ever accused of murder in Chicago. She was young and slender, with bobbed auburn hair, wide-set blue eyes, and an up-tilted nose with translucent skin, delicate features, an intelligent expression, an awfully nice girl, and more than usually pretty. details of the clothes that she wore to trial were also heavily documented. Even though her husband was rightfully furious with his wife for making him look like a chump, he eventually forgave her and became one of her biggest advocates, even coming up with the money to pay for her attorney, who was one of the top leading defense attorneys in Chicago, W.W. O'Brien. One of his strategies for defense was to make sure that the public fell in love with Beulah and felt deep sympathy for her. And so, with this in mind, he announced that Beulah and her husband, Al, was expecting a baby. When taking the stand in her own defense, she would speak in a southern, childlike voice while looking at the jury with innocent, pleading eyes. The prosecutor asked, how was it possible for Harry to have been walking towards her, intimidating her, but he was shot in the back? Beulah's response was that she did not believe he had been shot in the back, that it was probably a little under his arm. The jury bought this hook, line, and sinker, and after just 2 hours of deliberation, they would reach their verdict of not guilty. She would go on to thank the juries personally, shaking their hands and even kissing one of them on the mouth. After she was acquitted of all charges, she filed for divorce from Al, stating, he doesn't want me to have a good time. He never wants me to go anywhere, and he doesn't know how to dance. I'm not going to waste my life with him. He's too slow. The filing that Beulah had claimed was that he had deserted her. And of course, there was no baby. She thought she would be able to use her newfound celebrity to finally break into the movie or music industry. But the public and the papers had no more interest in her, and she later went on to marry another man who was a boxer named Edward Harlip. But she divorced him after only 3 months of being married, saying that he was cruel. She would get $5,000, which equals to about $69,000 in today's money, as a divorce settlement. Beulah was a very selfish, narcissistic woman who only loved herself. But since we know what goes around comes around and that karma can be a bitch, Beulah died at the age of 28 from tuberculosis, just 4 years after she was acquitted for murder. Her body was sent back to Kentucky, where she is in a grave marked with the incorrect date of her death. The woman who documented the trial and ran the stories of the murder for the Chicago Tribune was Maureen Watkins. This trial inspired her to write a play about Beulah and some of the other women that were in jail with her at the same time for either killing their husband or their lover, which went on to become the musical Chicago and the award-winning film. That is everything that I have for you today. I hope you found this episode interesting and that you liked it. Again, thank you so much for listening, and I will see you on the next episode. Bye.